Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Mike Alameco from Food Talk. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. And we're here, as usual, at Roberta's Pizza, the home of Heritage. We are not having this type of food today, but perhaps many of you at home have tasted it a bit, or at least seen the presence of Ethiopian food in the U.S. It's becoming something of, or it has become something of a staple ethnic cuisine found in many restaurants. But I always wondered, what exactly is Ethiopian food and what distinguishes the most authentic Ethiopian food as it's prepared in homes? So I'm pleased to welcome on air and discuss a family cookbook of traditional Ethiopian recipes passed down from mother to daughter. And I guess also anyone who's interested, since I'm holding this book in my hand. But it really is a family Bible. And I'm pleased to welcome Mizrak Mekonnen. And you are speaking to us from San Francisco on the line. Are you there, Mizrak?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hey, thanks so much for joining.
Thank you.
So your mother, Conchit Zuga. I'm so sorry if I mispronounced. But she wrote this wonderful cookbook, the Ethiopian Cookbook, Pinnacle of Traditional Cuisine, at the age of 89.
Mm-hmm.
Quite an accomplishment. And so, you know, what compelled her, you know, I know that it sounds like she was perfecting these recipes over her lifetime, it sounds like. Why do you think she decided to publish it now?
She decided to publish it now because she, you know, felt that the new generation was losing the art of cooking Ethiopian food. Mm-hmm. Some of the cooking were lost, and others were just being not prepared the way she knows how it was prepared. So she wrote it for the sole purpose of passing the Ethiopian cuisine to the next generation. That's one reason. And another one is usually it's the amount of the ingredients is eyeballed.
Okay.
And so she decided, she said, you know, I have to correct that and put it in exact measurement.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what she worked on for years until she came up with the exact measurement that she thought would be perfect.
Yeah, that's interesting in so many ways because, you know, many cuisines around the world do not typically, you know, come with this, you know, written legacy of writing down exact measurements, and you know, it's more sort of like show and tell and oral, you know, tradition. So it's interesting that your mother first and foremost wanted to, you know, perfect her formulas. It sounds like she was a bit of a perfectionist. Is that?
Yes, that's correct. That's really true. That's what she has been ever since she was a child.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what compelled her to do that.
And so do you think this, since you're living in San Francisco, your mother's in Ethiopia still, when you speak of like the younger generation, do you think that it's like folks who have moved out of Ethiopia specifically, you mean, that are losing this touch with their heritage in cooking?
Well, it's not only people who moved out, younger generation, even for the generation that's in Ethiopia.
Oh.
She, you know, she wrote it in Amharic, one of our languages, so it's being sold a lot, and a lot of younger generation are using it back at home. Yeah.
And I know that there's a rise in restaurants and, you know, other foods, you know, global food trends, like pasta I saw was something that you find a lot now in Ethiopian restaurants, that is, in Ethiopia, so... do you think that younger folks are just not cooking or eating as much traditional Ethiopian food?
They do. Yeah. They do eat Ethiopian food. They do eat. Yes, you know, presenting it in a traditional form, that's lost
mm-hmm.
in the cooking, the art.
Right. And it is an art. Looking through this wonderful book, and I was just talking with some of the engineers, and we all are huge fans of Ethiopian food. We think it's delicious. But of course, we have no clue how to do it. So this is great. So first and foremost, most Ethiopian cuisine is centered around injera. Tell me a little bit about why that is so important. Injera is the sourdough flatbread that you use to sort of sop up all the different dishes.
It's because, most of our food is in stew form. Mm-hmm. So you need like a bread to dip it in.
Yeah.
And so that injera is the base for that. We also have different bread that we don't eat the bread daily.
Mm-hmm.
It's an event thing. We usually have Ethiopian bread, for a ceremony, some kind of ceremony.
Oh, okay.
But injera is everyday food, and it's made from a grain.
Teff, right?
Known as teff grain.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I noticed you have a whole section on breads and different types of breads. The one thing I love about injera, too, is that it's not heavy and it's not, like, too filling like most bread is. So you can eat plenty of it to as, like, a vessel for all the other foods.
It's not really filling,
I love that you
it's
have...
free of gluten,
that's true. It is
free of gluten. And it's loaded with iron. So usually, pregnant women in Ethiopia do not need to take extra iron pills because the injera has enough of that.
Wow.
And it's an advantage.
And what about the fermentation? Because the taste is very, sour. And do you get some... I think that that's one of the most striking things about it to me. So
yeah,
it's
from the fermentation. Yeah.
Yeah. So your recipe has you have to wait 3 days after mixing Ethiopian honey wine with water to kind of let it bubble a little bit.
Yes. You keep it for 3 days. But what I would suggest is keep it in a cool place. Somehow in the United States, it does not turn out to be the same if you keep it in a warm place.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping it in the fridge for 3 days and taking it out when ready to, to prepare it would be the best way to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can see all those bread and other fermentation geeks really enjoying this recipe. It's fun. All right, so... let's also talk about some other classic. What do you think are the classic flavors and ingredients you must have to cook Ethiopian food, like a pantry staples?
Staples would be number one is the what we call the berber.
The berber spice, yeah.
The berber chili, the pepper.
Mm-hmm. It's the spicy dry spice blend, right?
It's made up from the serrano, and then you add a lot of herbs into it, the cool garlic, ginger, basil. It's prepared in a certain way. It's not just the pepper itself. And then what we have, the shiro powder, is a mixture of java beans, sweet seeds, turmeric, dried garlic, and that's also basic to all the foods that we prepare.
Mm-hmm.
With the taste, that would be that.
Okay, so these are the typical, the spices that we want to taste in our dishes. That sounds pretty simple enough.
That you would use to prepare the food.
Mm-hmm.
Except when you're frying the meat, you don't use, the shiro or the barberry. But other hot food and non-hot food would either use the shiro by itself or non-hot food. And barberry would use both. The shiro powder and the barberry powder.
Mm-hmm. And most of the dishes are sort of long simmered, kind of like stews. So would you say that you need to kind of, pace yourself if you're going to attempt to make a feast at home? Start in the morning or start the day before?
You mean cooking it?
Yeah.
You can prepare it a day before. I usually prepare it a day before and keep it in the fridge.
Mm. And then
if
just
prepare, Yeah. So because it takes about, cooking an Ethiopian dish might take around 45 minutes to 1 hour. Mm-hmm. Just two. Yeah. Except a few, which you might finish in 15 minutes. But most of them would require between 45 minutes and 1 hour in medium heat.
Mm-hmm. I love that, that concept of just, making a large batch and then just having it on hand so you can, always add to it and have a nice little spread.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We could prepare what's called the collate stuff. You just prepare the basic together without adding water.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you need it, take it out from your fridge, add water, and warm it up.
Mm-hmm. I also love how communal, Ethiopian food is, how communal friendly, I should say. So these were meals that were made for family eating, like family style eating for a group and, something to make ahead and then just fill the table with all these different colorful dishes. I don't know. We were saying that, one of the most interesting things, one of the most fun things about Ethiopian food, too, is that you eat with your hands.
Yes.
Because
the injera is the one, your fingers should not be, actually, your fingers should not touch the
food. Okay, yeah.
So it's an art how to roll the injera.
Mm.
You know how to do it, it wouldn't touch you. So it's just like picking it up with a fork.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, if you know how to roll the injera, then you wouldn't really touch the sauce.
And
it didn't do that messy.
It's like the injera, you have to turn it into chopsticks sort of in your hand to kind of like get that perfect scoop or something.
Yeah, just you have to use kind of four fingers to roll it.
I just love how kind of cozy it suddenly seems when everybody's all just kind of... Yeah.
Always, and one of the thing is we eat from the same plate.
Mm-hmm.
It's
intimate.
And, it's intimate if you want to eat by yourself. They might say, hey, are you mad at somebody? How do you want to eat by yourself? You should share from the same plate.
I mean, that's the authentic, way to do it. I mean...
Yes.
I mean, what would you think, Mizrat, if somebody were to eat, these foods with a fork or a spoon? Would that be just like totally blasphemous in your opinion?
It can be done. I tell you what, how you can do it with a fork and knife.
Mm-hmm.
Spread the injera on your plate.
Mm-hmm.
And with your fork and knife, roll it like a burrito.
Okay.
After you cook the sauce, and then just use your fork. You can pick it up by cutting and picking it up.
That sounds like a good to go way to get.
Yeah, it's an easy way to eat it.
All right, so we can invent with this cuisine. We don't have to be completely authentic.
No, you can't. No, you don't have to. You can, adjust it to your taste, amount of ingredients, whatever you want to. You can. Adjusted to your taste. It's versatile.
The other thing is that, you were saying like gluten-free, these, the injera has so many unique benefits, but a lot of the foods are extremely colorful and healthy and use all these different legumes and grains and these things that we should actually be eating a lot more of. So a lot of garbanzo beans, there's... split pea or chickpea dish. And, I guess similar to we all think of like Indian food as like having a strong foundation. Would you say it's a little bit similar in a strong foundation in these delicious vegetarian?
Yeah, very similar. The vegetarian dishes are very similar to the Indian. But, even though... The vegetarian have those grains. The shiro powder has all the grains in it.
Okay.
So every time you eat Ethiopian food, you will get those grains.
So it's all built in there.
It's all been in there.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about a lot more like of these tantalizing recipes that your mother has compiled, but after a quick little commercial interlude, and we'll be right back.
Sure. Okay. Mm-hmm.
This is Lucky Dog by Odetta Hartman. You're listening to Eat Your Words. We'll be right back.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you.
All right, we're back chatting on Eat Your Words about Ethiopian food. Talking with Ms. Rachmaconen, the daughter of the author of the Ethiopian cookbook, Pinnacle of Traditional Cuisine. Ms. Rach, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. So before we get into some of your favorite dishes or your mom's favorite dishes, a little like, you know, background on why there seem to be so few. You'd think that with the popularity of Ethiopian restaurants and so forth, there'd be more interest in Ethiopian cookbooks, but I couldn't find hardly, you know, I just found like a very small amount when I just did a search in the way of traditional Ethiopian cookbooks. Do you know why that is?
You know what? It's echoing, Nina. I'm sorry, I wasn't able to hear you.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was just wondering.
It's echoing, yeah.
Do you know why there seems to be a lack of discussion or cookbooks about Ethiopian cuisine?
Well, I really don't know. It's because, yeah. We're newcomers to the United States. It's in the last probably 30 years that a lot of people have come in.
Mm-hmm.
So people have not started writing it. You know, it's in the last 15 years that we even see restaurants being opened in various places.
Mm-hmm.
So writing the book has not been started yet.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few books, you know. I know at least about 3 or 4 that have already been written, yeah.
Well, I applaud your mom for sharing her recipes, because, you know, as we tend to see a lot of, you know, celebrity cookbooks out there, and it's always refreshing to see what, you know, folks are cooking at home, you know, with their families. So, and also I noticed also that Marcus Samuelson, the chef who's born in Ethiopia but raised in Sweden, has been peppering some of his recipes with some Ethiopian flair. So maybe that's a little bit of the beginning of more of a dialogue on this cuisine.
It could be the one, yeah.
What do you think are, like, the biggest hits? Like, the most, I don't know, the most home
cooked? The vegetarian dishes.
Or any...
A good hit. I have about 2 or 3 people who own restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems the vegetarian food is very popular.
Yeah. Well, you also have a great meat and seafood section in the book. I love that there's a tripe dish, too, which I didn't know was something that is eaten in Ethiopia. You're kind of laughing. Is that a hard sell, you think? Or
I don't know. But for people from Latin America or Europe, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do have dishes with tripe.
Yeah.
For the United States, it would be, yeah.
Well, I think it's.
I talked to my daughter. She just doesn't like that.
Your mom, okay.
She's raised and born here. So.
I know a lot of people are scared away by that, but I'm so glad that your mom included that, because that broadens our knowledge of maybe some of the more traditional ones that haven't, been as readily embraced.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
And some of these, I know that you translated this this cookbook from, what was the language?
Amharic.
Amharic, yes. So I love that, you know, you have the transliterations of a lot of these traditional dishes like Dorawat with Tej. But some dishes, they don't seem to have, you know, an established name that we would recognize in the States. So, for instance, the Furs Asawat, you translate as spicy fish dish, which is looks... I love how simple that is, because that looks like exactly what I would want to make. It sounds delicious. And and really, with just, as you mentioned, like the Berber spice blend, you really don't need hardly anything in this besides fish, shallots, some garlic and ginger. You know, it sounds pretty delicious and simple.
So, yeah, and, you know, we have the garlic and ginger in it. Every dish, it's included in every dish, and that's also very good for the health. Right.
So one ingredient I was really stumped by, it's the false banana plant.
Yes.
But I see that's very popular throughout Ethiopian cuisine. So can you tell me, what is a false banana?
It's a false banana. Well, you know the banana tree?
Okay.
You know what it looks like? It's not really banana. It doesn't do bananas. But the leaves are similar to the banana tree. So what we use is the roots of the tree. Yeah, that's the root is dug and it's scraped and fermented for so many days. And then it's turned into powder. It's a long process. And this is, you know, good for people who have diabetic or diabetic.
Okay.
So in certain, that region of Ethiopia where people use this food in their daily, use it daily, they, very few people have are diabetic.
Okay, got it.
So, yeah. And another one you might be interested in, is the genfo.
Genfo? Okay.
Yeah, genfo is just made from teff and barley. Those are the two great powders used.
Okay, barley.
And it's usually served when a lady gives birth. During, throughout her pregnancy, you know, there's a backache from carrying the baby. And this is served after 40 days, so it could help her, you know.
That's great. You know, I love reading because there's so many cultures that have recipes just for women who recently gave birth, and I think it's that would actually be a fun cookbook to compile too. But anyway, getting back to the false banana, that's what does it taste like though? This powder after the, you know, the root has been crushed and fermented and all that stuff. What is does it taste like a banana?
No, no, absolutely not.
Okay.
It doesn't taste right. It's just a name.
Just
it doesn't
checking.
At all. I don't know. It has its own taste. I don't know how to explain it. It has its own It's not spicy. It's very close to... It's just bland. You put, you know, salt into it. So that perks up the taste.
Okay.
But... yeah.
So it's for savory foods, then, not...
It's, I don't know. I can't do grits, probably close to grits.
Oh, grits. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Right.
All right. So don't go substituting this stuff for in your banana sundae or whatever. Next.
You can't do this. You can't do that.
How about desserts? Is that traditional to... Because I don't see any desserts, actually. Is that not a thing in Ethiopia?
No. The only traditional sweet thing I know is honey. People, you know, Tej is made out of honey. Pure honey.
That's a good dessert to me. And I noticed that the traditional, the wine that's used in some of these recipes, it's a honey wine. So it's sort of
It's a honey wine. That's the edge is basically made from honey.
Sort of like,
that's the only really traditionally, that's the sweet thing that we use, except fruits like orange, banana. You know, those are sweet things.
You mean real bananas?
But dessert is only honey. Some people like to eat honey. So, dessert, rarely. They don't do that every day.
Mm-hmm.
But sweet things, we don't have dessert, per se.
Yeah, that works for me, okay. And certainly the little bit of that honey wine or mead, is that sometimes taken as an after-dinner drink or digestive? Or how would you drink the wine?
No, it's just drink wine as a regular drink, as wine.
Okay.
You know, you have your wine with your lunch or dinner.
Ah, gotcha.
Same way. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm fascinated by these dishes. What do you think I should try first if I'm a total beginner, totally new at this, and what's the best?
Easy cooking?
Yeah.
I would like to say the vegetarian dishes, any of the vegetarian dishes are easy to cook, to prepare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I'm looking at the red lentils one, the wok.
The lentils, exactly. Mm-hmm. And actually, the safflower is very easy.
Safflower?
Safflower.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. It might be an acquired taste, but it's easy to prepare.
Huh.
And the one I like the most is the garbanzo dish.
Yes, that looks good.
That you can, especially as a snack on the bread, you can use it as bread spread.
Mm-hmm.
It's really tasty. I like that.
Hmm. And I love the use of garbanzo bean flour too in some of the dishes.
Yeah. Sure, leche is also on page 41. That's very easy to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
And I would start with the vegetable dishes. The mild vegetable dishes.
That's so funny. It looks so.
And, you know, none of them are really hard to cook.
Yeah.
They are not. It's just take your time, work in a well-ventilated area, and you just, you know, work with it.
Work with it. So, well, I'm going to work with it.
Yeah.
I'm so happy that we have access to understanding these foods and how simple they are. Whereas it was once, you know, somewhat mysterious or maybe sort of guesstimated, not exact. This is really a wonderful project on your mom's behalf. So we got to thank her. Where credit's due.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, thank her a lot. Yeah.
Well, that's about all the time we have for today. But thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Rock, and for sharing this story, really, of your mom's cooking. It's beautiful and inspiring. So I'll be definitely sharing this with folks. So thank you again.
Okay. Thank you for letting me share with you and the rest of the people who might be interested in trying it. And I encourage them to try it. It will be fun.
We will.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Ooh, I like the way you do.
On heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.